Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors. Dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Stanton in for Ben Kiefer. Well, Iowa's Beverage Containers Control Law, known as the Bottle Bill, was enacted in 1978, 40 years ago. And for the most part, it remains popular. A Des Moines Register Mediacom Iowa poll released earlier this year shows 57% of Iowans polled either want the bill to remain as is or be expanded to include juice and water bottles. We'll be talking with some state legislators about the latest in efforts to make some changes. But first, what's the effect been so far? Has the law kept those recyclables out of the landfill and out of roads and ditches? And joining us now to talk about it, Alex Moon. He's Bureau Chief of Land Quality for the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. Alex Moon, thanks for being here.
Oh, sure. Thank you.
Well, talk us through how we actually keep track of what recycling might wind up in a landfill. How do we know what winds up there?
What we use, about every 5 years, we look at what's called a waste characterization study. In that study, we take a subset of the landfills in the state, and you basically pull a truck off to the side, tip it on the ground, and you have individuals that sort through and categorize all the waste. And so then we can see what types of things that could be recycled are ending up in our landfills. And so that study gives us a good indication of what we're seeing going to landfills.
Okay, and so how, what are some of the numbers? Can you be specific?
Sure. Organics is our largest waste stream, and percentage-wise, you know, we landfill about a ton per person a year, so there's about 3 million tons going in the landfill, and so I think we see about 30% of our materials are food waste that's going in the landfill. That's a large one. And then also plastics is another. Let me take a look here and see if I've got some percentages for you.
And yeah, go ahead.
Well, plastics is about 18% that we're seeing, and paper's actually 25%. Organics is 31%. And then you have just a whole bunch of other material in there, construction and demolition debris, metal and glass.
But when you're talking about the plastic that's in there, you're talking about things that could have been recycled?
Correct, yep.
So that number, talk about how this has changed over the years. Do we have a long-term trend line in Iowa?
Well, so for food waste, so we've done our three main studies. We've done 2005, 2011, and then 2017. So for food waste, we've gone up quite a bit, 10% up to where we're at now in the 30 range. The plastics hasn't changed much. You know, it was, it looks like 6%. It's out now moved up to 18. We have compostable papers, which has stayed about the same, down around 6.5%. So the biggest change, obviously, has been the amount of organics that we've seen.
Okay, but do we know, as far as recycling compared to, say, 10 years ago, is there a way to compare how much waste is being recycled compared from now to then?
Sure. We have another measure we use, which is it's a diversion percentage, and it's a complicated calculation, but I can tell you in the last 10 to 15 years, the overall percentage hasn't really changed much, and that overall percentage is, you know, roughly 30% of, and it's a comparison to 1988, the goal of being that we reduce what's going in, the total tons compared to 1988, but that number hasn't changed much in the last 15 years. We have diverted about, on average across the state, we're throwing away 30% less than we were in 1988, and there's an overall goal of getting to 50%. We just haven't gotten there.
What needs to happen to make that happen?
Well, you know, I think quite a bit of infrastructure in the sense of we have a lot of people or a lot of businesses that are collecting recyclables, but we need more in-state outlets for those materials, and that's what we lack. The other thing is with being a rural state, It's not as easy to collect recyclables in the rural areas because you have to travel a long ways to a facility that could recycle it. So more collection points where multiple cities could, their haulers could bring the materials to a central location, what we would call a transfer facility. And then, the economics of it, make a larger transfer instead of individual trucks driving across the state or out of state. So things of that nature could bring that number up. Obviously, if we can do more with the food waste diversion in the organics in general, that's going to help as well, since that's such a large percent of what we're throwing away.
And Alex Moon from the DNR, what are some of the impacts? I mean, we are talking about the bottle bill today, and can we examine from an environmental standpoint what some of the effects have been of that legislation?
Of the bottle bill?
That's right.
Sure. Well, I mean, it was introduced originally in 79 to combat litter. We've, for the longest time, had a recovery rate of 88%. We updated it this year, looked at some numbers, and we're down to 71. That's comparable to other states with a bottle bill. The overall percent of the waste stream that are bottles and cans is very small. I think it's about 1%. So on the overall waste going into landfills, it's really not doing much in that sense. But we, you can compare bottle bill states to non-bottle bill states, which there are 10 that are bottle bill states, and you can see that we have a higher recovery rate for those cans and bottles.
And not many of those states in the Midwest.
Nope, I don't think any of the states directly around Iowa have a bottle bill.
And have you examined those other states' systems to see how they affect those particular states and what might happen here in Iowa?
Not in much detail. Whenever the bottle bill comes up through legislation, we'll take a look and see what surrounding states are doing. But, that conversation, since it is mandated by law, is discussed quite a bit by legislators, so we're providing quite a bit of information, but we've not looked to see what changes would be needed. I can tell you just from what we hear from people like the bottle bill. The grocers handling the containers don't want to do that, so if you can find a system that can get the containers out of the stores but keep the bottle bill in place, I think that's what people are looking for. But that's easier said than done.
Okay, well, we've gone through a lot of data here today. Have you heard any more anecdotal sort of evidence? We hear a lot about trash and bottles and cans along roadways. Is there any way to characterize how that may have changed over the last few decades?
I don't know if I've got anything specific other than I know Keep Iowa Beautiful does quite a few surveys. And has looked at the data, but Iowa, the DNR specifically hasn't conducted any studies to see are the ditches any cleaner.
Okay. Alex Moon, Bureau Chief of Land Quality for the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you.
You're listening to River on Iowa Public Radio News, and we are examining Iowa's bottle bill and some possible changes. We're looking a little at the history and a little at where it may go in the future. And now to the rest of our panel for this half of the program, joining us from the State House Law Library, Joyce Russell, Iowa Public Radio State House correspondent. Hiya, Joyce.
Hello, Ben.
And joining us also at the Law Library, Representative Andy McKean, Republican from Anamosa. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And joining us by phone, Senator Randy Feenstra, Republican from Hull. And may have lost that connection. We'll get back to Senator Feenstra and just a moment. But Joyce Russell, what can you give us a quick summary of sort of what has happened this year at the State House relating to the bottle bill?
Right. Well, Representative McKean, I'm sure will be eager to talk to you about his bill, which expands the bottle bill to include more containers. This is an idea that's been out there for a while. It comes up every year. But he has a sort of a comprehensive approach to that. His bill did not advance. But in addition to that, there were bills in both the House and the Senate to repeal the bottle law. And those bills both advanced a little bit, but then did not advance any further than that. However, the bill in the Senate that was in Senator Feenstra's Ways and Means Committee, he is promising to, that one did not advance, but he is promising to offer an amendment I don't have any details on that, and maybe he will, and offered an amendment to get the cans and bottles out of the supermarket. So that's where things stand right now.
Okay, and Representative Andy McKean, let's go to you. And briefly, we heard from the Iowa DNR there at the top of the show. Does the data and the information we're hearing from the DNR, does that kind of jibe with what you hear?
It does, and I really appreciated what Alex Moon had to say. I think what we're all trying to do, and I think there's a lot of common ground here that's possible, I think Iowans like the bottle bill. It's been effective. They want to see it continue. I also think most Iowans would love to see the cans and bottles out of the grocery stores, too. And I think there's a way to achieve both purposes. And what I have recommended, and I had 42 co-sponsors, which is quite a large number to have in the Iowa House, and it was very much a bipartisan effort, 25 Democrats and 17 Republicans. What we are proposing to do is to increase the handling fee for redemption centers from 1 cent to 2 cents. They have not had an increase, believe it or not, in 40 years, and they're dropping by the wayside. And if we could increase the handling fee from 1 cent to 2 cents, they become profitable. We'd see them popping up all over the state. It would be good for the environment and good for economic development. And it would allow cans and bottles to be taken to the redemption centers instead of the grocery stores. So I think we could work together to achieve an approach that could keep our bottle bill and also could get the cans and bottles out of the grocery stores. And I'm very committed to working with the grocers and seeing if we can find a way to work together to make this possible.
And Andy McKean, you mentioned a possible increase from 1 cent to 2 cents. This is a part of the bill that many people and really consumers really don't see directly. We go to the store, we buy our cans and bottles, and we pay that extra 5 cents. If we bring it back, we get that five cents back. But then there's another piece to this. Can you help us understand how it fits in?
Well, there's also what's called a handling fee, and you have to be paying folks to take care of these cans and bottles when they're returned. And over the years, well, back in 1978, when this landmark legislation was passed, it was a 1 cent handling fee, which worked back then. But my goodness, 40 years have passed, and it's still just 1 cent. And these redemption centers cannot make a profit with just a 1 cent handling fee. So that's why the legislation recommends increasing that to 2 cents. And I've been told by redemption centers all around Iowa that that would make all the difference in the world and would allow them to continue. And, you know, quite frankly, in addition to taking cans and bottles, I think it could be part of a statewide recycling program as well. And you could have other recyclables returned to these redemption centers. So I think there's all kinds of interesting possibilities that could allow us to achieve some very desired results.
And Ben, let me jump in here with a question. That 1 cent handling fee, who pays that?
At this point, the distributors pay that.
And are they resisting raising that?
Yes, they would resist raising that. So we're exploring different ways of trying to handle that 1 cent increase. There are different options out there.
And in about 15 minutes, we'll be hearing from a guest who does run a redemption center that can give us some perspective from that front. But Andy McKean, we've heard for so long discussion about the bottle bill, about possible changes. I first came to Iowa in 2005, and people had been talking about it for a while then, and it comes up often. What's different?
Well, what's different is that we've had the bottle bill for 40 years, and it's been very effective. People tell me that when they cross into Iowa, they can tell almost immediately that they're in a different state because the ditches and roadways are so much cleaner. But, you know, over the years, things have changed. And now, believe it or not, we have more water bottles being sold than pop. Hard to believe that that's the case. So that now what people are seeing now on the ditches are instead of pop cans, they're seeing water bottles. So I think there's a real interest in trying to gradually expand the bottle bill to include other items in addition to beer and pop.
And that's in your bill, right?
That's in my bill, right.
Okay.
And how, tell us more about it. How would it work? Would we just be adding on to what we already do? Anything additional need to happen?
Well, the original piece of legislation that we introduced, which was, again, just a starting point like so much legislation is, would have added water, energy drinks, and fruit drinks and tea drinks to what's currently under the bottle bill. But I think all of us who are interested in this effort are very willing to look at a very gradual increase so as not to overly burden our grocery stores. And also, the goal would be, as we see more redemption centers develop, that gradually our grocery stores would be relieved of that responsibility and more of the cans and bottles would go to our redemption centers, and eventually they'd be out of the grocery stores in their entirety.
And you've heard feedback from people in support of this. What have you heard?
I tell you, I've never had so much more of a groundswell of public support for this than any other piece of legislation I've been involved in all my years in politics. It's a very popular bill, and people want to see the bottle bill continue. They've seen firsthand how effective it's been. It's been very good for environmental education for our young people. Small community charities and organizations have raised significant funds with the bottle bill returns, and I think it's an extremely popular piece of legislation. And I will tell you this, I think it's not going away, and I think it's time for those other folks to work with us to try to make it an effective part of the puzzle.
If you've just joined us, we're talking about Iowa's bottle bill and some recent legislative attempts to make some changes to that. You just heard from Representative Andy McKean, Republican from Anamosa. Our Iowa Public Radio State House correspondent Joyce Russell is with us. And joining us now by phone, Senator Randy Feenstra, a Republican from Hull as well. Randy Feenstra, thank you for being here.
It's a pleasure to be with you today. And it's a wonderful topic that we can talk about and collectively work together toward creating some modernization in this area.
Okay, we'll talk about your amendment.
Well, I think there's a lot of things that are moving parts, as Representative McKean so eloquently noted. The thing that I really look at is trying to get these bacteria contaminated containers out of grocery stores, and these cans and bottles are coming into sanitary retail locations, and it's just not a good thing that we want in our retail locations. So I'm looking at trying to figure out a way to modernize a system where there can be drop-off points in different communities where they can drop them off and maybe even do some type of technology as we move forward where they can get a some slip that says, hey, this is how much I get in return, and that gets put back into their checking account or whatever it might be. But these are things that I think we have to talk about and work through with the grocers and distributors and recycling locations and see what we can comprehensively do.
Okay, well, what's maybe preventing that from happening?
I don't think nothing's preventing it. I think it's just coming to the reality of modernizing the system. The system started in 79. We haven't done anything different since 79. And I think now we're to the point where we all believe that there's some sustainability in recycling material. And that's not only bottles and plastics or cans and plastics, but it's also cardboard and so forth. So we need to create robust recycling systems that can take all these items. And how they succeed is by selling this product. It was just noted over the weekend, China buys a tremendous amount of our plastics, and they have now said that they want clean plastics where they don't want any liquid in the bottles and so forth. And these are things that the recycling centers need to work through as they sell this product.
Okay. And, I did want to both Randy Feenstra and Andy McKean to address, recycling today is different than it was 40 years ago. The public has a different expectation and approach to recycling. We see much more recycling going on, even in public places. Hasn't the public kind of perception of this changed? And maybe there's another way around this? Andy McKean.
Well, I think that that the bottle bill and statewide recycling efforts are not mutually exclusive. I think we need to find ways to work together to make it all work. And again, I guess following up on Senator Feenstra's comments, I think one of the most important pieces of the puzzle is to have more collection points throughout Iowa. And by increasing the handling fee from 1 cent to 2 cents, we'd be seeing redemption centers profitable and many more of them around the state, and they could be very good collection points for our recycling efforts. I think in one fell swoop, we'd be doing a lot for the environment and also a lot for economic development.
So, Senator Feenstra, Representative McKean, you're both saying we need more redemption centers. Representative McKean is saying we need to increase the handling fee, and then redemption centers would be coming out of the woodwork. Are you? What's your idea for getting more redemption centers out there? Are you proposing raising the handling fee also?
Yeah, that is an option. I mean, there's multiple options. You can do that. You can have self-service kiosks at different points in communities and so forth. It's interesting how, if you look around Iowa, who's collecting the cans? Many of the cans are being collected by the Kiwanis groups, Rotary clubs, PTAs, and they're using them as fundraisers. So, I mean, we just got to figure out how do you collect these cans in bulk, or if you have a recycling container on the curbside, how do you extract the cans and bottles, or don't you retract them and have the recycling center take not only the cans and bottles, but also taking the cardboard and paper and hopefully become successful in the myriad of different items that the recycling center can sell as they move forward.
So, Senator, the legislative session is starting to wind down, or at least April 17th is the day when expense accounts end. Are we going to see your amendment here pretty soon?
In 30 seconds, please.
Yeah, I'm hoping so. We're working through it with the recyclers, the grocers, the distributors, and so forth. And like I said, there's a lot of moving parts, but I think we can get something done yet.
And Andy McKean, anything to add?
Well, I'm just delighted to hear that. And, you know, good ideas never die. And I think I appreciate Senator Feenstra's willingness to be looking at this very important issue.
Okay, Representative Andy McKean, Republican from Anamosa, thanks for being here. And
thank
Senator
you.
Randy Feenstra, Republican from Hull, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And Joyce Russell, IPR's State House correspondent, will stay with us in the second half of the program. We'll also get a perspective from the Can Redemption Centers, one that was set up by local grocery stores. And we'll hear from Dave Hoffman from WCDC in Washington, Iowa. We also will hear from the Iowa Grocers Association, and we want to hear from you. Do you redeem cans and bottles? Is it worth it? What would make it easier? Call us at 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100, or River to River at iowapublicradio.org. I'm Ben Stanton, back after a break on River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
Glad you're with us on River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. It's a legislative Monday when we look at what Iowa state lawmakers are up to in Des Moines and how that affects you. We're covering possible changes to Iowa's Beverage Containers Control Law, usually known as the Bottle Bill. And we want you to chime in. What do you think? Do you redeem cans and bottles? Is it worth it? What would make it easier? 866-780-9100. Or you can email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org, or tweet at IPR Talk. Still with me on this legislative day, Joyce Russell, Iowa Public Radio State House correspondent. And joining the program now is Dave Hoffman. He's the president of WCDC in Washington, Iowa. That's in southeast Iowa. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me, Ben.
Well, to introduce WCDC and what you do, you're a nonprofit organization. You've worked with bottle and can redemption for a long time, but this last year in May, you opened, there was a new redemption center. The group's main mission, though, is serving disabled adults with pre-vocational work and supported employment. So briefly explain what that is.
Well, we have some different areas that we support disabled adults. One is our Dehabilitation Center, And basically our clients come in and spend a lot of time with us during the day. We go out on field trips. We've been all across the state. We've been to Des Moines, Dubuque, with our clients, having fun, enjoying different field trips. We also have a pre-vocational training. This is preparing our clients for possible work in different areas. And then we have supported employment. And that is where once our clients get into the workforce, we job coach them and we make them successful in their job or help them to become successful in their job.
Okay. And so, like I said, not quite, I guess, a year ago, there's a CAN Redemption Center set up that now WCDC operates in Washington, Iowa. Tell us about how that came about. What's the origins there?
Well, it's very interesting. We have a Hy-Vee, a Fairway, and a Walmart all in Washington. And, of course, all three of those businesses were looking to get the cans and bottles out of their stores. And we were looking for a way to find employment for our disabled adults. And in discussion with them, we came to some agreements and became a partnership. Hy-Vee, Walmart, and Fairway helped us with the purchase of a building and basically pay our mortgage, pay our utilities, pay our insurance to open this CAN Redemption Center. And then with doing that, we're able to remove the cans and bottles from their stores. So it's been a good partnership. It's enabled us to employ disabled adults at this CAN Redemption, and now we've added shredding to it. So, you know, it's been a good win-win for both organizations or the groups.
Help us understand, for those that haven't been in a redemption center, what happens there, what comes in, what goes out, and what are you doing over the course of the day?
People walk in, and we have different tables that we just they come in with their bottles and cans, and we take them, we count them. As we say, we want to get them in and out as quick as possible, get them their money. They don't want to be there. All they want to do is get the bottles and cans back and get out. And so we, as fast as we can, we get them in, get them their nickel deposit for each can or bottle back, and get them out the door, give them their cash, and get them going. And so we make it as fast and efficient as possible. It's not a huge building that we're in, so sometimes there's a little bit of a wait, but most times it runs pretty smooth.
Okay. Well, how many cans and bottles, roughly, do you get, say, over the course of a day?
We average about 15,000 cans and bottles a day, and at first impression, that's a lot, and it is a lot. But when you consider that we only get a penny per can and bottle when we turn that back into distributor, that comes out to $150 a day. And we have to pay our manager that runs our redemption center. We hire a high school kid that comes in and part of OJT. And then we usually have a couple of disabled adults and possibly a job coach that is coaching those disabled adults. So $150 a day does not go too far.
Okay. And so getting back, so we've heard this proposal of increasing from 1 cent to 2 cents what we get back. I assume that would be something that would help.
We would be all for that. We were very excited when we heard discussion about that earlier in the year. And, of course, we were a little we were a little disappointed when nothing more came of it. So we're hoping that discussion continues and that this keeps rolling forward. It would be a big deal for us.
And anything else? Go ahead. Joyce Russell.
I want to jump in with a question here because I've never been to a redemption center. I've always just taken my cans and bottles back to the grocery store. So what's the draw for the redemption center? Can you come in and get in and out quicker? Why isn't it just easier to go to the grocery store?
Well, one of the things I know at least in the stores in Washington, people that brought their bottles and cans back had to take the bottles and cans and put them into flats and then organize them and then they would be turned over to the stores. At our redemption center, and I don't know that it's this way in all redemption centers, people bring them in and we ask for a clear plastic bag just so we can make sure that there is no nothing else in those bags. Sometimes the stuff that's gross that comes in is pretty bad, so that's why we've really demanded the clear bags. But we count them for them, and we are very quick, and we have multiple people that greet them and get right after it. And usually it's a very quick and easy time, as opposed to where the store, where they have to drag them through the store and then they have to get them sorted out. We do all the sorting, we do all the counting, they're in and out, and then they get their money and they're gone.
And to be clear, now, at least in Washington, now those three places you mentioned, Fairway, Hy-Vee, and Walmart, they no longer allow that redemption to happen in their store.
That's correct. That was one of the agreements, that because there is a can redemption store or a place within a certain amount of miles that the DNR requires, they do not have to accept. So it forces every can and bottle to come our way, so which is a win for us. And in my personal opinion, it's a win for the stores too, in that they don't have those dirty bottles going in through the grocery store, and so it's a win-win.
Okay, that's Dave Hoffman. He's president of WCDC in Washington, Iowa, which runs a can and bottle redemption center. Dave Hoffman, stay with us. When I introduce two other guests joining us from the Law Library at the State House, Michelle Hurd is president of the Iowa Grocers Association. Michelle, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Yep. And Dustin Miller is a lobbyist for the Iowa Grocers Association. Thanks to you.
Thank you.
Well, talk about how the grocery store's role in this process. We heard a little bit about, not wanting cans and bottles to be dragged through stores, but generally, what's your view?
You know, we've talked over the last 40 years about our concern with bringing the cans and bottles back into the stores. I think, however, it's important to also say that that's only one of the concerns that we've talked about. We have been supporting the bill that was in both the House and the Senate. We've referred to it as a sustainability bill, which we feel like addresses a much larger issue here, a larger portion of the waste stream. So, bringing those back to the grocery store is definitely a concern that we've talked about and one that we share. But we really feel like there's a bigger conversation here in helping to move Iowa forward and addressing a much larger percent of the waste stream than the 2 to 3% that our current bottle deposit law addresses.
And you said that you'd be open to expansion. What exactly would you be open to?
Well, and I mean, not expanding currently our bottle deposit law. The legislation that we were supporting this year and have worked towards the last couple of years actually would remove the 5-cent deposit that consumers currently pay and replace it with a plan that would help to provide more access to curbside recycling across the state of Iowa and also make it more available. It would really focus our efforts in some of the challenging areas that we have across the state. We've been talking about rural Iowa, maybe public spaces. And another great addition we had to the legislation this year we talked about, Alex Moon from the DNR talked a little bit about the diversion rate. Changes that we made to the bill in the last year also does encourage increasing that diversion rate at the landfills. So really, we did some polling earlier this year, too, and it shows that Iowans strongly, they do not support expanding both the containers of the deposit law, and they also do not support increasing the deposit to a nickel. So, you know, we can all agree that it's time to update. I think our poll showed 61% of Iowans agree it's time for a change. But I think they believe that in our survey results showed that it needs to be easier, more convenient, and also provide statewide litter and prevention efforts.
We're talking about Iowa's bottle bill and some proposed changes here on Iowa Public Radio on River to River Legislative Monday. We want to hear from listeners as well. You can call us to let us know. Have you redeemed bottles and cans? Is it something that needs to change? What's your opinion? 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100, or rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. And did want to go to some callers now. Let's see if we can go to Dave in Cedar Rapids. Dave, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm in Cedar Rapids area, so been here 20 years. And I think at some point we're overestimating the ability of the consumer or the redeemer to you know, just switch to a redemption center. I know that the local Hy-Vees in our area have converted to have redemption rooms with automated machines, kind of like what Walmart has done. And that if you only have to go to one place to redeem your empties, and then you can do your shopping, it's much better to go to one place than to have to go to two. Now, notwithstanding in Washington, Iowa, where, you know, they do hire or the program that they have with special needs adults, but all of those stores also hire special needs adults in their normal operations as well. So maybe it's a densely populated issue, but I live for 1 mile from a Hy-Vee, and I've been recycling or redeeming for the whole 20 years I've been here, and it taught my kids to do it, even though teenagers hate to do anything like that. But, and I do agree that it's messy, but I think you know, the best thing is to, you know, they created these grocery stores where they give you everything.
Okay.
You know, come to our place. We have a wine and spirit store and things like that.
Okay, Dave, so. I think we get your point. Let's have our guests respond to that. Thank you for your call, Dave in Cedar Rapids. Michelle Hurd from the Iowa Grocers Association.
Mr. Miller wants to respond.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I think I would actually agree with Dave in that convenience is important. And I think we see that reflected in the drop in redemption rate in just a five-year time period, from an 86% to a 71%. And I think what you're finding is more and more people see their home as a collection site. And some data points there would be, we're seeing in the waste characterization a drop in the redemption rate, significant, a doubling of it in a five-year time period. And in a hub-and-spoke study done by DNR last year, too, we see a robust network of recycling across the state. And in our polling, what we did see is people do want it to be easier and convenient. And what we're trying to do is merge the systems that are somewhat separate and find motivations in hearing what Dave's saying, talking about shredding, and what you heard from the two legislators, also thinking about redemption centers more as recycling centers and finding convenience for multiple products so that you can diversify the streams.
I was wondering, as Mr. Hoffman was describing his arrangement where the supermarket actually rents his space and there's kind of a cooperative agreement there, is that something that could be scaled up, Michelle or Dustin?
Go ahead.
So, I mean, make a system out of that. If the supermarkets don't want the bottles in their store, get them all cooperating and sort of supporting the redemption centers in the way that was described.
And I don't quote me on the amount of years that this has occurred, but we've dropped from about 300 redemption centers now just to over 170 of them. And it's part of the mechanics of the cost of this that, you know, both Dave has spoken about and both Representative McKean. And I think it's important to understand what the initial bill in 1978, which was implemented in 79, what the purpose was. It was to get recycling going, right? And in 1989, we ultimately put in a recycling law in this state. And what you heard from Alex Moon and others is that is stagnant. However, what we're seeing is there's more utilization of recycling. But ultimately, what you're seeing there, the law still allows for that, but we're not seeing the growth of these redemption centers like we should to offset the needs of the local stores.
And Dave Hoffman, I mean, is that something you could imagine, something scaling up? I know you sounded like you were kind of cramped in your quarters now, but could you theoretically envision that?
Well, I think there's, I see people coming in from quite a distance just because I'm not sure, but I think we might be the only redemption center in Washington County. And so we see people bringing in cans and bottles from everywhere. It would definitely be, there's different ways to look at it, but that the way we look at it, just because of, and you got to remember, our mission is to employ disabled adults. Moving to that 2 cents redemption would definitely help us.
Okay, let's see if we can go back to the phone lines here, and let's go to Lyle in St. Charles. Lyle, go ahead.
Yes, can you hear me okay?
Go ahead, yep, go ahead.
Okay, well, I'm a Boy Scout leader down in the St. Charles area. I've been one for 25 years. And we get a significant amount of revenue from recycling cans and bottles. We regularly hike or walk the rural roads and pick up cans and bottles. And it is quite noticeable that there are many, many water bottles and other bottles that do not have a deposit on them that are in the ditches compared to the ones with the deposit. So I think the deposit bill does work in cutting down the amount of debris. I would certainly favor expanding to include water and juice bottles. And, you know, our Boy Scouts get the can bottle drive going, and I think everybody wins.
And, Lyle, do you bring these cans and bottles to a grocery store or to a redemption center?
No, we go to a redemption center. We have one in Winterset, and we used to have one in Osceola. But I know the last time we went into the one in Winterset, well, we were in and out of there in 10 minutes, and I think we had a check in our hands for nearly $200. So we had quite a truckload.
Okay. All right. Lyle, thank you for calling from St. Charles. Appreciate your phone call there. And Iowa Grocers Association, is there a partnership in the future here as a possibility?
Well, I think one of the things I'd like to respond with is about the expansion conversation. I think it's important to note that that's going to be an additional cost to consumers, especially some of those consumers that are currently already conveniently recycling some of those items at their curbside. Now they're going to have to pay an additional 5 cents on that item and then drag it back to a redemption facility. I also think, you know, any expansion efforts is going to be an additional cost to consumer as well. So, you know, we really, again, want to come back to talking about the two fractured systems here that we believe need to be integrated together. They're both costly. They're both, consumers ultimately are paying the price for that.
And Lyle brings up an important hard portion of this conversation about the impact of nonprofits. In our bill and what we tried to approach in the litter fee was we would actually offer grants through Keep Iowa Beautiful for groups like that for cleanups and ditches. So it wouldn't necessarily even be just picking up cans, that there might be multiple things that could be cleaned up and streets. And one thing that's important to note, Alex Moon hinted on this on the Keep Iowa Beautiful litter characterization. What you actually find is redeemable and unredeemable containers are actually a very small percentage of waste. Mm-hmm. I know we all hear those anecdotes about the differences between states, but the actual characterization of our litter is very small. It's actually far more for food wrappers and cigarette butts than you would find for these.
Okay, we have a lot of listeners that want to get in on this conversation, a lot of opinions about Iowa's bottle bill. Let's see if we can get in a few before the end of our program. Marianne in Ames, can we go to Marianne?
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Quick, please.
I just want to say doing the right thing isn't always the easy thing. As a consumer, I'd be willing to pay 10 cents a bottle more and making sure we do the right thing. Claiming it's a hardship on people, I think, is a false claim. The majority of the products that we are purchasing in these things are not necessities to begin with. And if we're going to want these things, we have to be willing to step up as responsible community members, say, okay, I'm going to pay more, but then that may in itself help cover the cost of redemption centers.
Okay, Marianne, thank you very much for your
phone
call.
Thank you.
And Dustin and Michelle, with a little bit of time that we have left, it doesn't look like your bill is going to advance this year. Have you sort of given up for this year, or what's your plan?
I think, you know, as we mentioned last year, we understand that, you know, this is a difficult issue. This is one we've been talking about for many years. What we've asked is a continued conversation. I think there are a lot of stakeholders and a lot of people who want the same thing, you know, which is really a great program that helps move the state of Iowa forward. So if it may not go anywhere this year, we look forward to continued conversations between now and next session to continue gathering input from folks and hopefully continuing to make our bill better.
And we appreciate your time, because I think one of the biggest issues here is that the emotions of it can override getting to the actual policy and getting to the mechanics of things. And the last caller mentioned the 10 cents. I think even having a conversation with people to understand that if you pay 10 cents at the store, that really has no impact on Dave's business. What Dave is talking about is the handling fee, and being able to get to those specifics. Just appreciate your time today doing that.
Okay, Dustin Miller, lobbyist for the Iowa Grocers Association. Thanks for being here today. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Michelle Hurd is president of the Iowa Grocers Association. Thanks for being here as well.
Thank you.
And in our Iowa City studio, Dave Hoffman, president of WCDC in Washington, Iowa, and Southeast Iowa. They operate a redemption center there. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.
And along with Joyce Russell, Iowa Public Radio State House correspondent. This River to River program produced by Lindsay Moon, assistance from Natalia Reyes at the State House. John Pemble was engineering the show. The executive producer of talk shows is Catherine Perkins. Send us your feedback, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Stanton. Thanks for joining us.